Welcome to Rooted, the human side of sustainability leadership. Now, in today's podcast, I'm going to be speaking with Nick Valencia. He's the co-founder of LIFA, which is a community of independent sustainability consultants that he's started up with his co-founder over the last couple of years and has now grown to over 1,000 contractors on the books. And the conversation is kind of one of two halves, actually, and I really enjoyed both parts. But we start off by talking about Nick's roots in this work and the branches that he's most proud of. And it's really interesting to hear him talk about what's really led him into this work and into setting up this business and the mission behind it. But we also actually move into and conclude the conversation by talking about really, I guess, advice and practical thoughts and reflections that Nick has for anyone who might consider making a move into consulting, perhaps away from in-house work. And there's some really useful thoughts that he shares, but also some specific resources and things that I feel like a lot of people might find quite interesting to check out. So we'll put that in the show notes. So yeah, I hope you enjoy it. Let me know what you think. So today's guest on Rooted is Nick Valencia. He's the co-founder of LIFA, which is a startup which I'm told is the world's largest marketplace of independent sustainability experts. LIFA aims to connect businesses looking to hit their sustainability goals with top experts, tools and resources. So Nick started his career delivering sustainability and impact projects all across the world, really. He has a climate-focused MBA from Oxford University. He is co-founder of Oxford's first Climate Angel Investment Syndicate. He also speaks and writes regularly about sustainability work, sustainability skills, contributes significantly to conversations about the skills gaps in sustainability, and also publishes the True State of Sustainability report. So I'm delighted to welcome you to Rooted, Nick.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. And I'm really looking forward to digging into the human side of this work with you. I know you talk to sustainability leaders all the time, really. So I'm really interested in what you can tell me about your thoughts of how it really feels to do this work. Let's start, shall we, by just sort of starting at the beginning, if that's okay for you. So I'm really interested in where did your roots in sustainability begin? What drove your career journey towards this work?
Yeah, so there's probably proximate and profound roots to it, I think. They're kind of the more profound ones. I was speaking to my dad about this over the holidays. My family are from an island, they're from Malta, and me and my dad were having this conversation about these reefs near our house. Mm-hmm. And I was saying how over my lifetime I've noticed that the amount of fish that live there and they kind of the size of the fish. From when I was young, you know, that you'd see like big schools of bream, the occasional octopus, and now it's a dead zone.
Oh, gosh.
And he was saying there's a massive difference compared to when he was young, and the baseline has completely shifted. And so I think having grown up with something like that, I think I was always interested in these things. And I don't think it's just nostalgia as well. The Mediterranean is the most overfished sea in the world, and there's been a huge ecological collapse over the past 30 or 40 years. And so I was interested in it. And then I started, when I left university, I didn't know what to do. And I ended up out in Uganda working via the British government for this program and was ostensibly working on, you know, health and kind of citizenship. But a lot of the issues that we were seeing, so things like malaria numbers or malnutrition seemed to be tied to climate. And it was planting more seeds in my head. I then ended up at a big consultancy, wound up working for their impact arm, which I loved. And again, over time, would see these issues come up again, went back out to East Africa, went to the US, went to a couple of different countries with it. Left and started working with climate techs as COVID hit. Then went to study a master's because I really wanted to kind of formalize all of these ideas that I had in my head and all of these concepts and these, the practices that I was starting to encounter. Did a very climate focused MBA.
Yeah.
And then started Leafer off the back of that because I kind of came out of this MBA and finally I felt like I had these skills that I could contribute. And I was getting asked by a lot of different companies about how, you know, where they could find someone who was similar to me or where they could find carbon accountants. And yet they didn't have anywhere that they could readily find these people to do these kind of consulting or expert work. And I also couldn't find anywhere that would allow me to do that. So I thought it was funny that there was this friction on both sides of the market. And that's led us to today.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess there's a bit of a journey there from kind of doing more, let's say, like on the ground in real life kind of work where you're seeing the physical effects of the work that you're doing. And, you know, I guess that that ties back quite clearly to what you then saw growing up in terms of the depletion. But you've kind of moved a bit of a step away from that kind of direct impact. How do you feel about that? Like, does it feel like a too far away, or does it still feel clearly?
It doesn't. Yeah, it feels the opposite, to be honest. I think like the running a company feels the most directly impactful thing that I've ever done. And I think on Leafer, while, you know, are the experts and the consultants that we have are the ones delivering the projects. And to be fair, I started out working kind of with them and doing some of Leafer's first projects myself. You're basically just up to your elbows and just facilitating and kind of building things day in, day out that help them. You're coaching them on projects. You're working through to scope out things with clients. So it definitely feels like I'm more involved rather than less, because I think a lot of consulting projects, for better or worse, do stay on the theory and the strategy level as well. So yeah, it feels like we're kind of in the trenches.
And do you feel like, because you've got these what do you call them? Associates, would you call them?
Consultants.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got the consultants kind of out there in the field, because they're only being brought in for a very specific purpose, you get that sort of clearer link to, here's a project, here's an outcome, can we have a person for this? Do you think that helps as well?
I think so. I do think it varies on the project. We have projects which, as you say, are very kind of, you know, they're very narrowly defined. But you have projects where there'll be maybe a small business owner who says, look, I have this goal in my head and the goal is quite vague, become more sustainable, just help me with that, I need someone to kind of set the path forward. And they're really fun because the consultant
That was the word I had in my head when you said that. I was like, God, that sounds like fun.
It's great. Yeah. You know, you come in and you can set the strategy. And some of those have been running for over a year because you there's more and more to do in those areas. So there's definitely two types, I would say.
It sounds really interesting. And we've kind of moved into my second question actually a bit, which is asking you about kind of what you're most proud of and where you feel the impact of your work has been the greatest. Would you say it's this most recent work, you know, in Leafer, or is it something else?
It's so funny. It's really hard to know when you're doing your best work, when you're in it. I feel that way with Leafer. And I think there's definitely a difference between potentially like the time in your life where you've had the most fun and, you know, you've been the most engaged by your work, and then when you're kind of performing at your best. But I'm so proud of where we've got to with Leafer. And having got to this point as well from this kind of, you know, this idea I had and wrote it out on a Google Doc years and years ago, to having raised a big round of financing and grown from kind of a couple of people and a couple of people that I knew in my personal network helping out on projects to now over 1,000 consultants. But I think the areas where I'm most proud, I speak to consultants all the time, and it's definitely my favorite part of my job. And I think hearing from them about their career paths and the kind of changes that they made in their professional lives and just in their lives in general is an incredible thing. Many of them have completely changed careers because of it, have made kind of lifelong partnerships with people that they're working with. And some of them send me presents sometimes, which is really nice. So I think that is, and that definitely fills me with a lot of appreciation for what I'm doing.
Yeah, that's lovely. So it's actually, okay, yeah, you've got the impact of the work that those consultants are doing and delivering out in the businesses, but actually it's the way that Leifa has been able to facilitate really great lifestyles or changes in career for your consultants that actually gives you a good warm feeling.
Yeah, and I think the reason for that, apart from, I mean, it's just a nice thing, but apart from that is we really see our mission as get the best minds in climate and sustainability to where they're needed. Mm. We think that the market isn't serving that goal. Like, we think there's too much friction. And so when we hear about these things, we know that we're delivering on our mission and on just getting really, really smart people, you know, parachuting them into companies where they're needed at a fraction of the cost of what's currently there, because these companies are getting really good people for, you know, far, far lower than you would expect from a kind of larger consultancy. So it's great. And I think if we're delivering on our mission, we're happy.
The consultants that you have then, do you kind of get feedback from them that says, I don't feel I'm being utilized, or, you know, I'm not able to use my skills in the way I want. I'm not able to make the impact I want. And that's sort of partly why they come to you.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we get feedback from them all the time about, which is like, it puts our finger on the pulse, I think, of what's going on. I think, I mean, so much of their kind of skills, if you're an individual, let's say, you've got a set of skills and, you know, you want to utilize them, you want to contribute to the market or to society, it's quite difficult to know where your skills are most needed or would be best utilized. Mm. And so I think there's this kind of, you know, you don't know what you don't know, basically. And so I think we're able to give people quite a good view of, look, here are the other opportunities that are out there that might not necessarily have been in your orbit. I wouldn't say that you feel it yourself that much. I think you're just kind of, you know, you will, as an individual, you'll work within your framework, you'll work within what you can see. And it's our job to bring you opportunities that you might not necessarily be able to see, or tell you, look, the data suggests that actually you're really skilled in this area and this industry really needs you. And that's part of the report that you mentioned at the start. So I think that's our role in this.
Let me ask you a little bit then about, we've talked about where you've enjoyed your work and the fun that you've had. What's been the tougher times for you, or what's been more difficult, I guess? And I'm interested to come on to kind of what's helped you through those tougher times. But as you look back on those career steps that you've made, what's been most challenging?
Yeah. How long do you have?
We've got a while.
Yeah. It's difficult. I think, I mean, there's a lot of really difficult things about building a business.
Yeah.
And there's as many amazing things about it. Just to pick one, I think the kind of raising funds last year, so we raised around a venture capital we're beginning of 2026. So this was actually in 2024 when interest rates were just sky high. There's huge contraction in the market and investors just went to ground. Mm. And we'd gone from an era of really, you know, readily available cheap capital for startups in kind of 2021, 2022 to just basically a desert for it in 2024, mm. which was when we did our fundraise. And I think that's really tough. I think fundraising is tough anyway, but in an environment like that, you're getting, you know, over 100 rejections from people who ostensibly really know what they're talking about. And they're looking at your idea and they're looking at what you're doing and kind of looking at you in a way and saying, no, I just don't think this is going to work. And it's a really good way to build resilience because you have to believe in yourself and you've got to basically just keep going, as well as the fact that we were staring down a bit of the barrel of a gun funding wise. And that's why you need to raise money, because, you know, after a while you will run out. I think on top of that, you're trying to run the business. And so I think that was difficult. It's, you know, there's so many ups and downs with fundraising that we don't need to get into. But, you know, it's the process between reaching out and having interviews and going to investment committees and sometimes getting term sheets and getting offers from companies that then fall at the last hurdle. So you're in this kind of emotional roller coaster anyway. Mm. And then the great moments when you do get funding in and when, you know, when someone comes through and it's a great thing and you celebrate it together. And me and my co-founder it's definitely something that we try to get good at, is just making sure to stop and to celebrate those moments as well. Yeah. So, I would point to that, I think, as something that was definitely tough, but just taught us so much and definitely built so much resilience and belief into the business. And we ended up, kind of a happy ending to that story, we ended up raising an oversubscribed round. So it ended up really well.
Amazing. During that period then of when you're getting these hundreds of rejections, and presumably, you know, you're there thinking, well, I've got this great idea and we believe in it, otherwise you wouldn't be sort of putting it out there.
Yeah.
How does that feel to get just that volume of rejections? How do you feel on a day-to-day basis when you're getting another, no, not, it's not for us, or another set of really, you know, challenging questions or what have you?
Yeah. So, well, I think anyone who's raised money will have gone through this as well, because it's just a numbers game, and whatever you raise, you will get a higher proportion of rejections. It's just the way that it works. Unless you're extremely lucky. It's interesting though, because, like, as you said, the reason why you're doing it is because you think that you're seeing something that other people are not. And as you're running through the fundraising process, you're also getting kind of yeses from people. And so, you know, if it was just constant no's, then I think you'd never get anyway. But you're making enough process through this, through this period that you're making enough progress, sorry, through this period that you kind of keep the belief. But I think the interesting thing is the thing that you're seeing is what's happening on the ground. And so while you might be having these conversations, some of them go well and some of them don't, with investors, with your customers and with your consultants and just with your business, you're getting completely different signals. Mm. And I think that's where the belief comes from, just seeing, like, actually, look, this thing is really going and we're getting traction and we're solving a really big problem for people here. And so I think that's really it. I think if you weren't getting that traction, then you'd have to be quite deluded to go out and do this, or, you know, you're just on a wing and a prayer. But actually, we were like, you know, we would kind of, even at the moments where maybe you've had a bad week on the fundraise side, it would always seem to be a good week on the business side. So you'd be like, actually, look, this thing is working and, you know, we can bring that to the next investor.
Yeah. So it's really kind of looking out for the wins, celebrating them, and kind of really bringing, yeah, really kind of keeping them top of mind when you're then hearing all these no's.
Yeah.
And it must require quite a bit of, I don't know if discipline is the right word, but there must be a mindset that you need to be in to kind of disentangle the rejection and the kind of the slog of it, if you like, from your kind of your own personal identity, like trying to disentangle it from they're rejecting me versus they're rejecting an idea. How successfully did you manage to do that?
Yeah, I think that part is fine. I think I'm probably the kind of person that, like, how can I put this? Like, you know, I'll caveat what I'm about to say by saying, like, we are really happy with the people who've invested in Leafa. I think they're amazing. I feel, you know, we're really lucky to have them. Mm. There are some people that we didn't end up going with that didn't behave so well.
Right.
And I think I'm the kind of person that is quite good at just, like, bottling up those kind of interactions or those kind of feelings and using it as fuel, mm-hmm. and saying, actually, no, I'm going to prove you wrong. And I think, like, we have to a large extent. I think I'm all right with that. I think it's definitely a process that you need to cultivate, is, you know, when something goes wrong, is kind of actually using it as motivation rather using it as something that's going to slow you down or kind of, yeah, I don't know, send you into a dark place emotionally.
And balancing it out, like you say, with, you know, the other feedback that you're getting and the progress that your business is making. And I guess, yeah. I'm thinking about sustainability leaders kind of working in a business, you know, they're also in this process, aren't they? So very often of raising money or trying to get budget for things and trying to kind of make the case. And so those kind of I guess those thoughts around the mindset that you need to have, which is this isn't me that they're rejecting. This is just, you know, the idea, trying to use that as fuel for the fire, as it were. Those are really important kind of lessons for everyone, really, aren't they?
Use it as fuel. And also you just like, I mean, if someone is good, whether you're a head of sustainability or anyone else, you know, if you have any sort of customer or stakeholder, you'll get feedback from them. And I think it's, you know, separating out your ego and saying, look, if they haven't gone with what you're proposing in any way, whether it's a product you're selling, a business case or a fundraise, try and get their feedback and then use it to improve. And every rejection is an opportunity to improve. Mm. By the end of any sort of one of those processes, you should have a completely different offer to the one that you started, because you should just be using those signals. And I think that also makes it a lot easier as well, as being like, right, what I'm doing here clearly isn't working. How am I going to make sure that it does work by the next time, or that works a little bit better?
And I think that's such an important thought process to have. But it kind of does rely on, you know, at the core of it, you have a strong belief in yourself. You have a strong belief in the kind of the core of the idea. And we're now working on the feedback around it and the kind of how do we put it together. I'm kind of thinking about in terms of that time of your business starting up, where you were really kind of in the thick of it in terms of trying to get that funding. How did you kind of manage, like, what was your out of work life like? Like, how did you manage to kind of do things that then, you know, allowed you to switch off, or how did you manage it personally?
Yeah, I'm quite big on that. I mean, for one, I will say, like, my partner, my fiance actually is incredibly supportive and it's hard to think how I could have gone through a process like that without someone like that in my corner, just to be a bit of a kind of like a sounding board and just to come home and basically have a bit of a moan and a vent at the end of a lot of these days. I think also my co-founder as well, who's been through this process before and offers so much kind of good support and advice. And I think the other thing then is just like sleep and exercise, basically. Like, yeah. I don't think it's rocket science.
No.
I think I'm so big on that. I think there's been periods, you know, for example, like I had like an injury last year. And I had a few weeks where I couldn't really do that much. And the difference in your mental health and in your mood when you're not able to leave the house and go on a run or go kick a ball around or whatever it is to the days when you can is just a complete sea change. So I think there's the basic stuff there as well as all of the kind of the mindsets and the mental strategies that we've been talking about.
Mm. And that's really, it's interesting though, that you know, the first thing you talked about was the people around you, the people most close to you that you're able to kind of really draw from and seek support from, and I guess really open up to. So that's really important. I think some people really do bottle it up.
Yeah. And it can be difficult because I think in any scenario, and I think in a field like sustainability as well, where it's a bit of a black box sometimes. Having, you know, it maybe there's a lot of terminology or kind of just, you know, the experience in there that can be difficult to share with people, and it just becomes ever more important to do that as well. There's the fear that you think you might be boring people as well, but actually it's kind of what the people that are close to you are really there for many things, is to be able to share things that you couldn't share more widely.
Mm. And I'm thinking about your consultants now as well, actually, because so often I think from what you've described, they're going in alone into projects. And we know already, don't we, how many sustainability professionals work alone as well, just in their kind of in-house roles. So that feeling of loneliness, do you see that when you're sort of talking with your consultants? Are you able to support them?
It's funny, I see it more with, I mean, we work with a lot of heads of sustainability, and you mentioned this, not only in our report, but there's a lot of data out there that points to the average team size, or the most common team size in within sustainability teams in large and even enterprise companies is one. So I think it can be quite a lonely job role. And it's not only lonely because your team is one person. I think it's lonely because you're doing something that's very different to the rest of the company, and you're doing something in a macro environment that can seem quite openly hostile, especially in the last 12 months or so. And I think I've sometimes reflected that. I think that's part of why Leafa has done well, is because we seem to offer a shared community of practice and interest and values for those kinds of people. And actually, for heads of sustainability, we spoke to so many of them, and so many of them are our clients, or just people that we're speaking to day to day, that who were saying these same things about how they're feeling, the kind of isolation that they're feeling, the same problems that they're dealing with, that we ended up starting a community for them as well. And now we do monthly dinners, and we've got a big WhatsApp chat with hundreds of them in there. And I think, and that kind of flew without us really putting that much into it. And I think the reason is because people, you know, you're almost a bit alone together. Like you go through all the same processes, you go through all the same kind of experiences, but can seem that you're isolated until you lift your head above the parapet, and then you see that there's loads of other people who are doing the same thing. So I'm seeing it there. We want to do loads more on that front for the consultants this year as well, just in terms of offerings and community and places for them to meet and to share things. So yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, I think that would be great. And it's a real theme, actually. Whenever I'm doing these conversations for this podcast, or, you know, when I'm talking to my clients, we talk so much about finding the community. And for some, the community can be within their organization. It might be about, you know, building a really great team around you. It might be kind of, you know, more direct and immediate. But for others, it's about finding and creating your community and going out and looking for it. And there's so many, you know, last time on this, or no, time before on this podcast, we had Jamie Lannan, who runs Trio House Collective. You know, there's so many different types of community that you can be a part of. There's, you know, university ones, there's professional specific ones, this, you know, and everyone's kind of going to find their own one that they kind of, I guess, it resonates with them the most. But I think finding it is really quite important, isn't it?
Yeah, no, completely. And especially now, as everyone goes more online and more digital, I think, and loses maybe the physical, or the kind of, like, you know, the community within your neighborhood, for example, is probably less strong than it was 30 or 40 years ago, even, that I think, yeah, it becomes so much more important. Yeah, these communities of practice and of interest.
Yeah. And your new community, does it have a name? How can people find out about that?
There's the Leafa Sustainability Leaders Community, which is for heads of sustainability. So if you go onto Leafa's website, you should be able to see that. I'll just, and maybe we can link it afterwards. Yeah. And then the consultant, the kind of the membership and the community offer that we're doing for them, that's just for Leafa consultants.
Yeah.
And you have to be accepted onto Leafa and to pass our vetting process to do that. And then you'll get access to kind of learning content, to, you know, the ability to speak to the rest of the consultants, to live events, et cetera.
Nice. Well, yeah, we'll definitely put some links to that, because I think that Heads of Sustainability one, I think, yeah, really interesting, particularly. So I guess I like to sort of end these conversations with a bit of advice. So I'm interested in what sort of seeds of wisdom would you plant for, let's say, sustainability leaders, you know, that are kind of working out there, whether they're consultants or whether they're in-house. What seeds of wisdom would you plant for them based on what you've learned over your career so far?
I mean, we've just talked, I would have said find your community.
Yeah.
And we've just talked about it, just
number
the
one.
Importance of speaking to people who have done it before.
Yeah.
You know, part of the reason why Leafa was founded, but I just think it's an important thing. So maybe that as a more tactical one, I would say, just based on what we've spoken to, I think there's a thing that has really worked for me, and that I just think is a good thing to do on first principles, which is just cultivating gratitude for things. So, you know, I spoke about the fundraise and running a business can be stressful. But at the same time, I feel so grateful for what I do. Like, I absolutely love my job. And I kind of, even when you're going through a stressful time, you've got to remind yourself of that. And it becomes just a practice of reminding yourself and really like cultivating and nurturing gratitude. And it gives me so much fulfillment. I think working on sustainability can be really stressful and like, God, it's so frustrating sometimes, but it's also incredibly fulfilling, and you're working on things that are really important and that hopefully have a positive impact in the world. And that's great. You know, it's very rare that you get to have professional fulfillment and also kind of personal and social impact as well, or environmental impact. So I think cultivating gratitude is a big one. I think there's kind of many other ones that I would talk about for the more kind of tactical or strategic ones for head sustainability, but I think that is my main one.
Yeah, and actually, I guess just possibly this might be on the more tactical side of things, but I wanted to also just give a little bit of space to, if I've got somebody listening to this podcast who is perhaps they're in maybe an in-house role and they're thinking about what would it look like to start, you know, going freelance, contracting, or becoming a consultant? How might I do that? Or what's important if I make that leap? What could you, you know, and presumably you get tons of people phoning you up and saying, can I have a chat with you about this?
Yeah.
What's your advice to somebody in that position if they're thinking about, you know, could I come and join you, and what do I need to bear in mind?
Well, yeah, I would say I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't say come and get in touch with Lifa.
Sure.
And I think, like I said, we're kind of, it's funny, we've really identified that this kind of, this profile of the head of sustainability is maybe moving on from their role or looking to transition and to do independent consulting. And the offering that we're bringing out next year around kind of learning and around this community is really aimed at them.
Mm.
And I think part of that the course that we do is about how to succeed as an independent sustainability consultant.
Mm.
And what that means is the kind of like essentially setting yourself up as a small business. And I don't mean literally or legally, I mean thinking about how you run your own pipeline of opportunities, how you run your networks, how you find and win work and then retain clients. And so what I'd say is, you know, we have this big offering coming out. We think it's a pretty great deal for people in terms of how much more we expect people to kind of earn and how much more work we expect people to do versus what we charge for it. So definitely come and check that out. Mm. And I think the other thing I'd say is it's an interesting one within sustainability that, and within kind of any role, I think most consulting roles, the majority, like over 50% of opportunities are not going to be shared on platforms like LinkedIn or Indeed or anything else. And so what that means and what the implication of that is if so many jobs are just shared kind of privately and shared between people that you know, it's really, you really need to leverage your own network, and you really need to reach out without any expectation of an opportunity coming up, but reach out so that you're in the room when something does. And I think that's super important for people. And I think everyone has a bigger network than they think they do. And it's just about growing it and kind of engaging with people that way.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I hear so often is I talk a lot with people transitioning in different parts of their career. And they're kind of coming into it thinking, well, I might want a new job, or I might want to, you know, go into consulting or something. And they're sort of applying some of the tools and the thinking that they used 5 or 10 years ago to get a job. It's just not really working. And they're like, why aren't I getting any interviews, or why are my applications not landing? And I think it's because of that. It's because so much of it has gone behind the scenes. The clients that I work with that are sort of putting themselves out there and just going to do it, even if it feels a bit uncomfortable, they're the ones that are landing the roles that are right for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's more, I think there's historically, I think a lot of jobs have not been shared. I think it's more that the delta between the jobs that are behind the scenes and the jobs that are shared publicly in terms of their difficulty has widened so much because, you know, platforms like LinkedIn have so much engagement, so much content, and just so much kind of footfall and users now, that any jobs that are shared on them, you're hearing about people getting thousands of applicants. And so the ones that are public, it's almost like they're almost too public, you know, it's too crowded out and it's almost not worth applying. So it's really, really important. And there's a big imperative to look for the ones that don't get shared, because actually you'll be so much more competitive when you do.
One of the things that I was thinking about was just in terms of that, just as you were talking about that sense of almost, if you wanted to make the move into consultancy, treating yourself as a small business. And I thought this myself when I left corporate and kind of moved into coaching. And I hear a lot of people saying this as well, this feeling of like, oh, it's like a hustle. You've got to kind of turn into a hustle. And I felt very much that I didn't want to do that. I didn't like the sound of that. That sounded like not really very nice way of living your life. And I think a lot of people are put off by it. But I feel like doing it, it's quite fun now. I'm like, I quite like it. Well, how do you talk to people about this idea of, oh, I don't know if I can face the hustle?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, please don't mistake me. I don't buy into hustle culture. It seems like quite a kind of distorted, slightly gross way to kind of think. And I mean the kind of hustle culture that you see in LinkedIn.
Yeah.
I think what I more mean, and I think the thing that you might be getting at as well, is like, if you're going to do something like this, if you're going to set out as an independent, you're going to try and build your career yourself or build a portfolio career, is it becomes really important to recreate the structures that your previous employer would have built around you that you wouldn't have even noticed. So things like, you know, they might have had a sales team, they might have had a financial planning team, an accounting team, etc. You have to do that now yourself. And so it's really important to build those skills and to get good at that stuff. And I think a really important one, and, you know, one that we've been talking about, is this idea of like, how do you use a network to build a pipeline? Because you become your own sales manager, you know, you become your own kind of financial planner, your own CFO sometimes. So it's more that, because it's not easy. Like, it's not an easy thing to do. And I think the market is fairly crowded for these things at the moment. So it's about making sure that you're not just kind of resting on your own level of expertise, because it's not always the most expert or the most skilled people that really win or do well in these situations. It's the people who've positioned themselves the best and who've given themselves the most exposure and who have their kind of their finger on the pulse of the market the most.
I think do you describe it as a course that you're putting together for your consultant? Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting thing. I think with any career change, I think sort of having a bit of guidance, particularly when it's a career change from, you know, an in-house corporate thing to I'm going out on my own, just to have that guidance and go like, these are the things you need to think about. Here's the step-by-step. Here's the practical things to think about. Here's the experts you might want to draw on, you know, just having somebody have thought it through already. I think, yeah, really, really helpful.
Yeah. And it came from a place of, I mean, we run just so many kind of like research interviews with our own consultants and with our clients, and both of them were talking about that problem. And it came from this problem of, you know, I'm starting out on this journey as an independent, or I'm going through and I'm not winning enough work, or I'm not finding enough work, or whatever it is. And actually there's a lot of really clear processes that are out there. And on Leafa, we've got this bird's eye view. We have so much data on what works and what hasn't from the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of projects that have come through the platform. So we feel like we're pretty well placed for it.
Sounds great. We'll keep an eye out for that. Coming during this year, you said?
Yeah. So first, it's cohort based. So the first cohort starts end of January. But you'll be able to sign up for other cohorts via the Leafa site. And then we also have, just if you're already a Leafa consultant and you've passed our vetting process, you'll be able to get the course via a much lower kind of a monthly rolling fee, which allows you into the community as well. So it's really aimed at them, but we're also opening it up to people outside of LIFA who are looking to become independent or just looking to improve as independents.
Sounds very good. We'll make sure to spotlight it when it's shared. I feel like we've covered lots of ground, haven't we? We've talked about you, and we talked about your kind of your life and your career. But I'm quite pleased we also got onto some of this more like career advice for the people that kind of are in the audience, because I think you've got so much to offer from all those thousands of conversations that you have in. So that's been really helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's been great.
Yeah, it's been an absolute pleasure. So yeah, thank you, Nick, for joining me today. Let's say goodbye and leave it there.
Thank you so much for having me.
So thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Nick as much as I did. I hope you got lots out of it in terms of his thoughts and advice, really, for people considering a career transition into consultancy. I thought he shared quite a lot that was really valuable there, so let me know what you think about that. If you like this episode, please do share it with your colleagues and friends. Please follow the podcast wherever you get your podcast, so that you can be notified of the next episode coming up. And yeah, I'd love to hear any comments you've got, whether you want to drop them in the podcast channel, or whether you want to pop them on LinkedIn, where you can find me, Liv Cropper at Yellow Bench Coaching. So look forward to hearing from you, and take care. Thank you for listening. Bye.